well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The Second Amendment.
Today, Lee and I are joined with Sean of CABA.
CABA Sports.
CABA Sports. Why don't you go ahead and tell us what CABA stands for?
Well, it's an acronym for Keep and Bear Arms, you know, pretty much. And it's a firearms training company, you know. So pretty much do any and all firearms training from concealed carry to renewals to the advanced training to force-on-force, if you know what force-on-force is. So.
Yes, and we can get into that because I'm sure some people don't. But I'd like to start off by just asking you what the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution means to you.
Well, what it means to me may be different for other people. It means to me having the ability to protect myself without depending on the government. That's what it means to me. You know, and that's the best way to sum it up for myself. Everybody has their own definition of
sure.
it, but that's what it means to me.
Okay, gotcha. Are you an absolutist when it comes to that? Do you think that, you know, common sense gun laws or regulations, some should be in place, none should be in place? What's your thought there?
For me, it pretty much depends on, it's a case-by-case basis for me. You know, putting a blanket over something that doesn't need a blanket because it just needs a little shot of water, you know. I don't think that personally when it comes to it being a blanket thing, when it comes to 2A, that it should affect everybody.
Yeah, I heard the saying once, I can't attribute it to anyone specific, but I heard it's something like rules are for people who don't like to make decisions.
Yeah.
Tough decisions.
Yeah. You know, I'm really not a political person. I hate politics. You know, I actually grew up in a Jehovah's Witness household, which is strictly no politics. But I don't know why the 2A is political, but I guess because people want to have a way to control things around them.
We've had that conversation, haven't we? We kind of go, I don't know how this became political.
And seemingly more complicated than the simple notion that it seems to be.
Yeah, well, and it doesn't have to be complicated. You know, it's like, well, leave me alone and let me protect my family the way I want to. As long as I'm not out here doing things that are against the law, why should how you feel cross the threshold of my door?
I agree with you 100%. Yeah. But that's interesting that you don't get into politics at all. And in the past, for quite a while, actually, the Second Amendment has been very politicized. And that's a lot of why we started this, is to try and educate some people and advocate for the Second Amendment because of how it's become a volleyball.
Of course.
In the political arena. It seems to be a lot of value in trying to, you know, keep the kids safe and you know, ban this firearm or that magazine. You know, you're here in Illinois with us, and now for 8 or 9 months we've been dealing with a pretty strict ban that has really limited what any of us can purchase or sell or transfer without registering. And it's become a hot-button political issue in Illinois for sure.
Yeah,
what are your thoughts about, like, PICA? Do you have any?
Yeah, I have thoughts. All I can say about that is, how is that doing help in the city of Chicago with this crime? You're always going to hurt the guy who you know will probably comply.
Abide by those rules.
Abide by the rules, yeah. Instead of the ones who don't care.
Yeah,
we just had an assassination attempt with a firearm that had a obliterated serial number.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, and there are, what, 400 million guns?
Something like that.
Something like that in the United States, you know, and I can guarantee you 10-20% are guns that can't be traced.
Sure.
They've probably been more.
Yeah, they've been stolen and serial numbers filed off and stuff like that. Yeah, absolutely.
So for me to take a tool you know, away from somebody that can help them protect themselves, you know, to me, you're kind of like creating a purge situation.
Yeah, that's not the first time I've heard that, to be honest with you. So how long have you been instructing and teaching here?
I'm going into my fifth year. I've actually been carrying since 2005. I lived in Minnesota for almost 20 years and carried there.
Okay.
And I'm originally from Chicago, but we moved there, came back here. Didn't get back into firearms that much because, you know, my wife wasn't that into firearms. But once she started to get into it and her interest was piqued, that woke my interest up again. You know, so I've been really strong into it for the last 5 years.
Oh, that's great. It certainly helps when the significant other enjoys the same hobby.
Of course, yeah. And she enjoys it not as much as me, you know, but she enjoys it. And that kind of gives me a little push sometimes, too, because she really does, you know, like to know how to protect herself.
What was the firearm environment in Minnesota? How did it differ compared to, you know, around the Chicagoland area?
Well, I really can't touch on that because I stayed away from a lot of the you know, the areas where you should. Now the crime, I would probably say per capita is probably about the same, you know, because here we have 2-3 million people, and I think
with Chicago metro area,
yeah,
right,
and the Twin Cities 400,000-500,000. So you still had the same crime. It's just, of course, a little less because, you know, we didn't have as many people. But it still seemed like it took place a lot there. You know, I just tried to stay as far away from it as I could.
Yeah. Okay.
Does your wife do anything with you, like, as far as the training realm is concerned? Does she ever get involved, like, in your classes or anything?
She comes because she's not a certified instructor. She comes. She'll help out. But she likes to come just to get the knowledge. You know, because me being an instructor, although I'm an instructor, I'm still a student. I learn something from every class I teach.
So true.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Leah and I have talked about it numerous times. You can never have too much training.
Of course.
And the day you think you don't need any more is probably the day you've failed.
Oh, yeah,
Because you can do yourself a huge favor and never stop learning.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell a little story that just happened to me a couple weeks ago. I went to Cabela's. I'm not going to say which one, but I went to a Cabela's, and there was a gentleman who worked at Cabela's, and there was a young man who wanted to sell his firearm. So, you know, they have a little counter to where they clear him. I happened to be standing over there, and the person who was clearing the firearm, he turned clearing it, and he flagged me. And I said, I pushed the gun down. I said, you flagged me. Well, no, I didn't. I got 40 years of experience. I said, I don't care how much experience you have. You know, you flagged me with your firearm. And to me, when I hear people talk about how much experience they have, that's a red flag for me. Because years don't mean anything. I've been driving for 30 years. That don't mean I'm a good driver.
I agree with you. Right.
Yeah.
Also doesn't mean that you don't make mistakes driving.
Of course.
I do too. I probably do it more than I would like to admit.
Of course.
And that's the tough part, you know, like being humble enough to, you know, just say, hey, you know, thanks for catching that.
Of course.
I should have been more careful, something right. Like that. It's difficult to do on the spot. You know, everybody's got an ego and everybody's got pride.
Sure.
I find that, especially, unfortunately for us in the gun world, like there's too much of that going around.
Of course it is.
Yeah. We've talked about the prevalence of arrogance.
Of course.
In some of these firearm stores. There's one that I'm not going to mention, and Lee's had a similar experience there, and it's to the point I just won't go back.
Sure.
I don't, especially now with that many more firearm stores being around.
Of course.
I don't need to deal with someone that, because they have a firearm on their belt, feel as though they get to talk down to people.
Of course.
I'm not a fan of that at all.
Of course, yeah, and I completely understand. Yeah.
Have you run into it much on your end? Sort of like people, other than the guy, you know, sort of taking offense to, I didn't muzzle you. Is it something that you've encountered in your firearms journey where you get turned off by people who are experts or?
Well, here is what turned me off a lot is instructors. I'm turned off by a lot of instructors.
Yeah, in what sense? Yeah, go ahead with that.
I started doing this monthly where I do like a, I do an instructor workshop, you know, an instructor development class. And the first one I had about 6 or 7 instructors in it. They came, and I was asking just basic, simple questions, you know, because I'm trying to make instructors better. I can learn something, you can learn something. Out of the 8 instructors that were there, 6 of the instructors did not know what AR meant.
Really?
I'm serious.
That's interesting.
It is interesting.
It's very interesting.
Okay.
6 out of the 8 instructors did not know what AR meant. Now, they said the words, of course, the assault rifle. Or,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that kind of made me tense up a little bit because we're out here certified teaching people. Emphasis on the word teach.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're giving wrong information, you know, so it kind of made me take a step back and go, okay, do I want to do this anymore? But I then had to ask myself, but it still needs to be someone here.
Yeah, but it's also why you teach the class, right?
Correct.
So, yeah, did you enlighten them?
Yeah, I did. Right. You know. Right. And
how'd they take it?
Well, one instructor, well, I won't go into the conversation because I got a little tense.
Okay, I understand.
But the person, they didn't want
to. And that's the subject of our question, right? Like, how do people, are they receptive to learning?
Yeah.
I mean, it's good that he or she was willing to come to the class. I think that's a really good thing, right? It shows that you have a desire to learn.
Right.
But then how receptive you are within the course is another story, right?
Yeah, and the one thing I've learned is that I always want to put myself around people that know more than me.
Sure.
I don't want to be the smartest one in the room.
Yeah, yeah. Then otherwise you're in the wrong room, right? Yeah,
so I want to always be progressing, learning from people. Somebody that's been teaching for 6 months, that doesn't mean I can't learn something from them. Yeah, so, but, you know, that being part of my journey, paying attention to stuff like that, it really made me question, am I doing the right thing? You know, because we have so many instructors out here, but a lot of them are unqualified.
So where are you with, sorry.
Are you still doing that?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, where are you with that? Like,
yeah, I mean, I still do it, you know, because there are instructors that do want to, you know, get better, you know, and learn, you know, and learn more, you know, so yes, I still do it.
Good.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's in addition to teaching concealed carry classes, and what else do you offer?
Well, the concealed carry, the renewals, teach the advanced, you know, the basic training, kids, and like I said, the force on force, the semunitions. To me, that right there is what I really love to do.
Okay, that was going to be my next question. So, where, you know, being that, I just wanted to see where your mind was. What's really motivating you to continue? And
yeah,
that's the focus of your work right now. So, force on force is the focus of your work right now.
Yep, that's the focus.
How's that going for you? How's that?
It's going a little slow, but It's starting to build, you know, a little momentum, because what I did is that the instructors that I had in my class, I offered them that class. I said, come take this class. That way you can be a better teacher to your students, because if you've never experienced something, it's hard to explain to somebody how it's going to be. So being an instructor, I want to offer that to instructors. Come take this semunitions class so you can really see what it is to have this and be in these scenarios to where you have to make split-second decisions. And then next time, maybe you won't Monday morning, you know, quarterback if you see a shooting or something that takes place ago where that person could have. I just put you in that same situation and look how you perform.
Yeah, what did you do?
Yeah.
Okay, so I've got a pretty good idea of what force on force is. I'm sure Lee has a pretty good idea. But for anybody that's not listening, can you expand on what you teach in a force on force class?
Yeah, the force on force, now the type of class that is, it's, you're using real firearms, but they're converted to shoot non-lethal rounds. And I put people in concealed carry threat situations. So say, for instance, you're coming out of your house, you're coming out of the grocery store, you're just walking on the streets and you have somebody come up to you. I may have one of my role players, you know, allow you to de-escalate, and then as he's walking away, I may have him ramp it back up again to see, you know, so, and I want to put people in a position to where I get their blood pumping, you know, their heart rate up and things like that, because the one thing about force on force, what it does that a lot of people don't get is that being good at the range and a marksman at the range is completely different. And I like to expose people to that. I get sick of people telling me what they did at the range.
Right. How tight of a grouping they can shoot.
And I had a guy, and he's on Instagram. He's pretty, and he has a nice little following. And he was on Instagram showing how fast he can draw. Oh, I'm 1.2 second draw. I said, okay, come take my class. So I had him take my class, and I put him through a situation to see if he can draw his weapon and fire as quick as he could. So by time I came out, I already had the drop on him, but he still tried to draw his weapon. And what he did, he actually pulled it and he shot off to the side. So that really gave him a humbling experience. You know, because yeah, you can do it. You can do it in a mirror. You can do it all right. This. But when you have somebody standing in front of you, that changes the whole complexity because now you're thinking, now you have a moving target. So that's kind of like what Force on Force does. It puts people in situations to where they have to think about their next move. It also, too, exposes them to stress inoculation. So because they've been in it, they'll be able to say, you know what, this is a reflexive thing for me. Anybody who says and tells me what they're going to do, I know they don't train. Because the person who trains, they're not going to tell you what they're going to do. It's going to be a reflexive.
I like that. I like that a lot.
It might not always work out in your favor.
Of course. And yeah. And the thing about it is that you're exactly right. It might not work out in your favor, but you're still giving yourself a chance.
Yeah. I'm going to forget who to attribute this to as well, but have you heard about the fighter ace concept and why they came up with the idea of a fighter ace?
No, I haven't heard.
I think it might put it, what you just said, into perspective and coalesce your thinking around force on force. So if you mind, I'll share it with you.
Oh, of course.
So they realized somewhere early on in the Air Force's history that if you could have a person who went up into aerial combat, and if they could successfully win 5 dogfights, they never got shot down after that. So they created these courses that tried to simulate aerial combat as close as you could possibly get it, right? Force on force,
right?
And if you could get those pilots to be successful in those dogfights 4 or 5 times, you're insulating them from being shot down. And I think that's what you're talking about with force on force. You're replicating the real world of work, exactly. The chaos of the real environment. And I think maybe you'll agree with this, maybe you'll disagree, but I think you'll agree, is that what you're really teaching them to do is managing the violent event.
Of course.
Right? They're not in control of it.
Of course.
And all you can do is kind of like manage it.
Yep.
And hopefully you can manage it in a way that you come out on top.
Exactly.
Mostly.
Exactly.
And the more you can stress inoculate, the more you get those victories under your belt,
of course.
The more you could open up your brain to thinking about all the options of how do I manage this situation, you only do that through force on force. So I commend you. I commend you for doing that.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, and I tell everybody, I said, don't think you're going to turn into John Wick all of a sudden. I said, please don't think that. And I humble a lot of people. I actually had a class a few weeks ago with a young lady who was terrified. I mean, she was terrified.
Understandably so.
And I tell people, I said, going through things like this is going to let you know if you have a fight or flight mentality. She actually had a fight mentality. She thought she would, but she did really well, even though afterwards she cried.
Mm-hmm.
because what I do, and we actually do it down here sometimes, we do it upstairs, I'll put up a tarp, I'll go behind the tarp, I'll call a scene. It'll be maybe two or three role players behind there. The first situation I did with her is that I actually acted like I had her husband held hostage, and I came from behind, and she had me in he had me in a headlock, and I was pretending to be her husband, and he was talking all kind of garbage to her and everything and stuff like that, and I said, make sure, I told him behind here, make sure once you get to a certain point, I want you to act like you shot me, and he acted like he shot me, and when I went down, she instantly, boom, boom, and she didn't know she would respond like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, now you know how you would respond in the situation. I said, but it's not always going to go like that. But
right.
At least you know you're going to fight. You're not going to pass out, run, or anything like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
People are learning a lot about themselves.
Of course.
If you wouldn't mind taking a minute, I would love for you to tell people where they can go to find out more or sign up for a class. Because I think that would be very intriguing to a lot of people.
Yes, including me. I'd love to come and take a course one day.
Oh, of course.
I think it's fantastic.
So where people can find me, I'm on Instagram, Kaba_sports, and then my website is kbsports2.com, and you can call me 612-889-4755. That's pretty much, the best way to get in touch with me.
Gotcha. Call or I know that you text as well.
Yep. Call, text.
Gotcha.
DM me on Instagram.
And that's 612-889-4755.
4755. Yeah.
That's great.
It is great.
I think there's a lot of value to those scenarios that you're teaching there.
Sure.
for a lot of people.
Yeah. 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 It's a lot of value in it, but.
Do you do that on site here in Oak Forest?
Yep, I do it right here. Yeah. I actually do it in this room. I clear out the room. Like I said, I put up a tarp. You know, I have all my gear. You can see the gear over there. Yep. I have all my gear. We used
the tarp. I saw some orange on the walls.
Yeah. So, you know, we really have a good time. And I don't teach any more than 6 people at a time.
Great.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm putting them each one through 3 to 4 different scenarios.
Awesome.
So each one has a different scenario. So somebody may be going, well, this is what he did this time, but right. I'll switch it up.
Yep.
And they don't even know what's coming out. I actually had a police officer take my course. I had a Secret Service, like an agent take my course. And they both love it.
That's great.
Yeah. And one of the agents, he was one of my role players.
Good for them for coming out and putting it on the line a little bit because, again, there's ego part, right?
Of course.
And it's like, yep.
Of course. And now with that one, I had the agent. We did a role-playing scene to where the cop, you know, was in the situation, and he said, well, I want to do a situation with him. And I said, okay. I said, okay, let's do it. So what we did is that I acted like I was suicidal.
Okay.
So I came from behind the curtain. Oh, my God, you know, my wife left me. I lost my job. I think I'm going to kill myself. And I had the gun to my head, the fake gun to my head and everything. And the officer was talking to me. He was talking to me and everything. And I'm like, I just can't do it. And then the guy came from behind, from behind the tarp. And he was like, man, please help my friend. Please help my friend. And he started to focus on him. And I got down. I'm like, man, I'm just going to kill myself. And I got down and he started focusing on me. But then he drew his attention away from me. Man, that's my friend. And he was walking towards him. And as he started to walk towards him, his attention went to him. And then I stood up and I said, bang, bang, got you. Yeah.
No kidding.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
I would have liked to have witnessed that. That sounds like it would have been a good scenario.
Yeah, and I have video of all that stuff, too. Yeah, so I pretty much record the whole session so we can...
And then you hot wash it with the students afterwards?
Yep, we can do a little debriefing.
Break it down and stuff.
Yep, so they can see it.
Can learn a lot.
You can learn a whole lot. What people don't get, this is what I tell people. Well, my instructor told me to breathe and do this and do this. I said, that's fine for marksmanship.
Right.
That's fine for marksmanship. But in the defensive shooting... You're not going to be like, excuse me, sir, 1, 2, 3. That's not going to happen.
A static paper target is completely different.
You can get your sights aligned. In a real-life situation, it's pretty much going to be a point-and-shoot kind of thing. You know, so don't get too worked up over being able to do that at the range that you're good at the range.
Right.
Have you drawn from a holster before? Have you done live fire before? All those kind of things. Most of my students, like I said, they'll take the class, but... I won't see them.
And for follow-up for...
For follow-up for training. Yeah. Like I said, I think for... And this is my personal opinion. I think most people see just being able to own the gun as a novelty.
Yeah, sort of check the box kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree with that a lot. I see that plenty since I've really become a very big firearm enthusiast. You get more and more people talking about... Hey, what would be a good first gun? What would be a good concealed gun? What would be a good firearm to put in my dresser if somebody breaks into my house? And it seems more often than not, when I find out somebody did get a gun, they fire it the day they bought it at the range.
Of course.
And then I'll see them 6 months later. Hey, have you been to the range at all? No, just that one time.
Yeah.
On a very regular basis.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me, too, because I never tell people what type of gun they should buy. I said, you have to go shoot them to figure out what you like.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's your home defense gun? The one that's closest to me when I need it. That's,
Lee has a theory that it, I'll just say for him is when people ask, well, what's a good concealed carry gun to get? He says, whichever one you'll have with you.
Of course.
There's no point in buying something that you're going to leave at home.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no need to say, well, this is my home defense, this is my carry gun, this is this. If somebody breaks in the house and you're in the kitchen, whatever gun you can get to or whatever thing you can get to use as a weapon, that's what you're going to use. You're not going to go, wait a minute, my concealed carry weapon is downstairs. Let me get my home defense gun.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
So along everyday carry, do you have a favored setup?
Yeah, I do, but I don't like to speak about it.
Gotcha. Okay. I can respect that.
I have my favorite. And I will say, for me, I'm not a person that does things on a seasonal basis. You have some people, this is my summer gun, this is my winter gun. The reason why I don't do that is because I get used to mine. If I carry something different in the winter when it's fall because it's bigger, I may forget that this one has a safety.
Gotcha.
So I carry the one all year round.
One
gun. But I have plenty, but I just have one that I...
Yeah, no, that makes sense. One of the things that I've talked about in the past is I've gone to a couple different shooting of events. And because I don't do them often and I don't train for any of the speed or sporting events,
right,
I'm pretty certain I'm never going to win one.
Yeah.
So when I'm doing them, I actually use my everyday carry setup so that I don't ever... establish any muscle memory or instinct to go to grab a firearm that maybe is in a quick holster.
Of course.
And I think it's along the same lines of what you're talking about. You want that repetitiveness to be consistent.
Right. Yeah. And getting into competition shooting and things like that, I may get into it. You know, I'm kind of considering it, and you don't have to be the fastest as long as you're consistent. If you can hit your alphas and your charlies, you know, then you're good. You know, have you guys ever heard of this system called ACE? It's called ACE XR Virtual Shooting.
I have not.
Okay. Once we get off the air, you know, I brought it here so you guys can check it out.
Tell us about it.
It's a pretty dope system. Now it's mainly geared towards the competition shooters like USPSA. And they have stages set up to where you shoot them, and the firearm that you use is actually replicated to have the weight and the feel of like a real firearm.
Okay.
And I think it's a P320 that they have, and they have a Staccato P version. And I have the Staccato P version, you know, and it's a pretty, really dope setup.
Huh.
Yeah. So it's really fun. You can get your dry fire in, you can get your reps in. That can help you with your reaction time. That can help with a lot of things, transitions and things like that. So, yeah.
Do you mind if I ask you how you got, I think it's sort of an enlightened perspective for you as an instructor within just 5 years for you to move into that force-on-force realm? Because I completely agree with you. Like, that's where the rubber meets the road.
Yeah.
How'd you get down that path? Like, what led you there? Did you have that in the back of your mind before you started teaching, or was it something that happened as you started teaching? You sort of had some light bulb moments. And you're like, hey, I need to move in this direction.
Yeah. Well, once I started
that work out for you.
Once I started to teach, I never knew that existed. But once I started to have that thirst for knowledge and learn more, I started to watch different videos, see different things. I'm like, that seems pretty interesting.
Got it.
You know, and once I got into it, you know, I was like, well, this is going to be the way to go, because this right here is going to, munitions training, force-on-force training is the closest thing you're going to get to using your real weapon. That's the closest thing you're going to get.
Yeah, and if you don't mind me saying so, this is only the second time we've met, but I 100% admire the fact that it's obvious to me that your goal is to give the most amount of education to anybody that's coming to you to learn about firearms.
Of course.
And that is probably why you ended up with this force on force, because that's getting to, you know, a realistic scenario.
Yeah, so that really says something about you as an instructor.
I applaud you for that. I think that's fantastic.
I do too. I'm sitting here, I never met you before, but you know, I can tell. I think that's a big indicator that
absolutely
he has a drive to be the best, but he also is not going to just be okay with, you know, I'm going to cash in, I'm going to do concealed carry a lot, and I'll let these people, you know, go out and
if they want to train, they train.
Right. Yeah. That's really interesting.
And I don't knock people for whatever they choose to do. You know, if that's how you do it, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
But for me, I have a different approach. You know, for me, it's, you know, it's not about how many students I have in the class, you know, how many people I teach a year. To me, it's about who can I effectively train to be able to protect themselves or their family. And they know that they've got competent training. So for me, that's where it is for me. I want to be able to, I don't care if I teach 6 people a week, 6 people a month. If those 6 people took something away from my class that made them better firearms, you know, like owners, you know, then it's a win for me.
That's I got a feeling they're taking away a lot more than that,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I have some students that really, really didn't believe that things happen like that. Mm-hmm. You know, because of course, it's easy for somebody who can critique something and say this is how something should have taken place when it didn't happen to you. Mm-hmm. But when it happens to you and you go, oh, hell, I couldn't even get to my weapon quick enough. I couldn't even do this. They were on me like this. They got to me so fast.
Didn't see that. Didn't
coming.
Think of that.
Of course.
I'm sure all those things come up a lot.
Yeah.
There's a fairly popular firearms enthusiast. I won't necessarily mention his name. I probably could, but I saw a video where he was put in a situation, a scenario like you're talking about. And this is somebody that I've followed for years, was an NRA advocate and everything. And afterwards, one of the questions they asked, they said, do you know how many times you fired the firearm?
Oh, yeah. And see, I watched that actual.
Okay. You know, and I believe he said five for certain. Yeah. And it was eight.
I think it was eight times. Yeah. Yep. I watched it.
And he said he was certain.
Yeah.
That it was five times.
Yep. I recall that completely. And see, I watched that episode. I think he did two of them.
I believe that's right.
Yeah. Yep. And I did watch it.
And I found that interesting. Somebody that's, you know, very experienced, does a lot of knowledge-based stuff, is an enthusiast, a smart individual.
Of course.
Was certain. And he was wrong.
Of course.
But he was certain.
Of course. Yeah. And see, the biggest thing is being able to assess your situation. And you never know how it's going to go down. You know, we play it over in our minds how we think we're going to respond or what this person may do if you tell them stop. It's not always the case. You know, I've had people, well, can I just shoot them in the leg? What if the person's high on drugs? Adrenaline. They may not feel it at that point. I said, but, well, I'll just shoot them, blah, 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 and kill them. I said, never say that word. You're stopping the threat.
Right. No, absolutely. But in every scenario, there's thousands of variables. And none of them, because most of your students, any of us, we're on the good side of it, right?
Of course.
We're immediately at a disadvantage. They hold all the cards.
Of course.
A perpetrator, they're the ones controlling all of those variables.
Because they know what they're going to do.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're pretty much reacting to their actions, you know, but some people think they're quick enough to, I'm like, don't try it. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a lot to it. And that's why I said for me, just educating people, you know, giving them knowledge and I always tell them, you don't have to come back to me, but go to somebody, vet somebody, ask simple questions that'll let you know if this person is qualified. You can ask simple questions and you can vet them real easy by just asking simple questions. Here, that same class that I was telling you about, not the class, but the workshop, that same workshop, I asked all those same instructors. I put a picture of a revolver up on the screen, and I said, can you tell me which way, what this little divot right here means? You know, and they had a picture of it, and I pointed to it, and I'll tell you guys what it is. But they pointed to it. Not one person can answer it. Not one person. Now, I don't know. You guys may know.
It might be good to know.
Or may not know. But it's a little divot that points either down or up. And what that lets you know on a revolver is which way the cylinder rotates. Neither one of those instructors knew that. So I said, but on your slides, as you're going through and teaching people, what if somebody asks, what does that mean?
Right. Good point.
What if you do a reload? And you've only got
exactly
two more bullets left in that reload. Which way is that cylinder going to go?
And you do this, and it goes this way, and you're thinking it's going to go this way.
Yeah.
Why didn't think of it? I said, well, you know, when...
That's why you're here, right? Like, that's why you come to an instructive development course, right?
When you take on the responsibility to teach someone, me personally, you have to learn as much about that as you can. You know, and of course we're not going to know everything.
Right.
You know, but to me, that's basic stuff.
But in that workshop, I'm sure you were 100% willing to learn from any of those other instructors as well, right?
Of course, yeah. Yeah, because it wasn't just about firearms. Of course it was about firearms, but it was also about, you know, retaining students, you know, the struggles of getting students in your class. You know, and different things like that. Well, how do I market? You know, so it wasn't just necessarily you know, gun lingo.
There was like, a business aspect.
How can I be a better
there.
Instructor? You know, how can I market myself better? Mm-hmm. You know, why can't I fill my classes? You know, and I did a little radius, and I put in a zip code, and I put in a zip code, and I put in for that zip code because you can search for instructors. Within a 10-mile circle, a radius, it was probably 70 instructors.
Wow. From here?
No, not from here. I just put in.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, I just put in a certain zip code. I'm not going to say the zip code. But within that 10 miles, there were about 70 instructors. You know, well, this person over here is only charging $50, and I'm charging $250, you know, so how? So it's kind of, you know, not fair that this person is charging $50 and I charge $250. You know, well, what do you do about that? And I said, well, I said, I can't tell you how to run your business, you know, because I don't want you to devalue yourself.
Absolutely.
You know, if you feel your prices are worth that, then that's what you charge. You may have people to pay that price. But also to remember, unfortunately, when it comes to having your concealed carry here, people more so look for value, you know. Is it cheap? Can I get this class quick? You know, even though you have to do your 16 hours, it's only $50. Well, why is your $250 better than his $50? For me personally, unless I have enough instructors, I'm not teaching a class of 40, 50 people unless right. I have another instructor or a few more instructors that can help.
Yeah. Yeah. So some of these gun academies do, though. They'll fill a classroom with 30, 35, yeah. 40 people. And
yeah.
You know, that they run the 8-hour class every Saturday, every Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. And I've actually been a part of, like some classes where it was like 40 to 60 people, you know, but, you know, you had enough instructors to cover everything. You know, one instructor trying to teach 40, 50 people, it's not good.
Right.
You know, but the classes that I've helped with has been really good because there's been qualified instructors there, you know, to help.
That's the key, right? Qualified instructor, right. And I don't know if there's an ideal ratio, but
well, we just talked about this on the way out, and I'm sort of at the point where I think it's like one or two.
What?
One or two students? Like I just had a couple out, but I've had this observation prior to them
for training or concealed carry.
For training, not so much for concealed carry, but any kind of like training where I want to get something done. Because if I'm out at the range. And I've got one person, they've got 100% of my attention. And there is so much that I want to impart to them in that session that they have with me.
Sure.
And then when I throw another student on the range, well, now I got to divide my attention 50-50.
Of course.
So right there, like, you're getting half of what you would get.
Of course.
In one-on-one. Yep. Well, then you know, divide that up into three. Now you got 30%. If I'm able to, as an instructor, divide those up equally between the three.
Right, valid.
Which, right. No, you know how that works. There's usually one person that needs more attention. Right?
Yep.
But then the other two are getting 5%.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a real issue is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
and the student instructor ratio is a real issue.
Yeah, and it is a real issue. And that's why for me, when it comes to being an instructor, what I've learned to do, because I've seen some instructors that have this one way to teach, I had to learn to take on each person's personality to become that person, to help them learn the way they learn. I may be a visual person and be able to learn from just watching. Some people you may need to have a conversation with and talk them through it. So I had to be able to take and say, you know what, I need to talk to this person and see, do they have any barriers? It could be a situation to where somebody wants to take their concealed carry and get the class and get their weapon, but they've been traumatized by a firearm. Mm-hmm. So that could be a mental block for them. So I have to ask them questions. Have you been in a domestic violence situation? Have you, you know, I have to ask these kind of questions of people. Also have to ask, do you have any mobility issues? You know, like arthritis, wrist problems, because everybody probably can't hold the gun the perfect way.
Sure.
So I have to teach them.
That was one of my biggest challenges. I had a guy that had a spinal cord injury, and his dominant hand was no longer capable of doing the things that we would like a person to do.
Of course.
And that was tough.
Yeah.
We're still working on ways to figure out like exactly what's going to work for him to get the job done when it comes to his firearms work.
Yeah, and one thing I had to learn too, you know, and this is just teaching going on and paying attention is that you have some instructors, like I said, I don't knock anybody on how they teach. But what I've learned to do, especially when it comes to people, teaching people, you have an instructor. This part of your finger needs to be on this part of the trigger. I don't teach that because, say for instance, I'm teaching you with a Glock 17 and I'm teaching your son on that same Glock 17 and his hands are smaller. Women, smaller right. hands than us. So for me to tell her to get her hand on that trigger, mm-hmm. I had a young lady, she was maybe 5'1". Her whole hand can fit right here.
Right, yeah. She's got a different grip than
so
you or I.
So how am I expecting
right.
her?
Right.
So I said, well, how I'm going to start to teach is wherever your finger can place on that trigger safely, that's how we're going to teach you how to shoot. Don't try to, so, and that's just my way. Mm-hmm. That works for me.
No, that's logical. Absolutely.
Got to be willing to do it.
Got to be.
You know?
Yeah, just the learning process, the learning curve, just getting better as an instructor. That's just something that I'm not going to say I fight with, you know, on a daily basis, but I want to get better. I want to be better. I want my students and anybody who trains with me to see that I have a passion for this, and it's not just about, you know, making money from it.
No, I mean, it's pretty obvious to me. We haven't been talking that long, and it's pretty obvious to me that you have a passion for it, and your desire to get better is also to take the people around you and drag them with you so they get better. As well, right? What are they? High tide rises all boats, right? Let's yeah. everybody get better together, and, yeah. and everybody can excel, and then teach a few more people.
Of course, yeah. And it's easy, it's easy to become lax with your training because we all have that excuse. Well, life, yeah. life. But we all make time for stuff we like to do.
No, that's true. Lee has brought up a couple times, and I know you've, I believe one of the first time I was here, I saw it, some of the mantis drills.
Yep.
They can keep some of that dry fire
of course.
Training interesting.
Of course.
I like the, you know, you get accomplishments and they'll send you a patch or they're having you do different drills daily, and it's not
something
it's
not that so takes you out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, and it's not so redundant.
Yeah, and you can't go to the next level until you complete that level. If you look on my patch board up there, you'll probably see 6 or 8 like mantis patches because I train, man. One thing I don't tell everybody what I do mm-hmm. because people tend to want to challenge.
Sure.
Yeah.
So for That's me, true. I want you to not have any idea. Yeah, you know I train,
yeah.
but you don't know how deep I train.
And at the end of the day, what really matters is what the student can do, really not so much what you can do.
Exactly. Yep. As long as I can get them to a level to where they're comfortable with their training, they feel competent. Speaking of that, I had a young lady who she took her concealed carry class through another instructor, you know, and she called me, you know, because she knows I do this. And she's like, you know what? I need to get some better training. But the instructor I had, you know, he was just so impatient with me and I didn't feel comfortable with him. So
it wasn't Lee Castle, was it?
Let me see. No. No, no. And,
that's funny.
Yeah, and see, what I actually started to do, I do bundles. I do a bundle class to where you can purchase, like, 5 classes for the price of 4.
That's a great idea.
You know, and then
okay.
progress you, you know, from making sure your fundamentals are right to you being able to hit the target to you now being able to keyhole the target. To now you can double tap, you know, to now you can shoot, you know, a strong hand. Now you can shoot, you know, weak hand. You know, I have them at the range because you can't draw at the range. I have them press out, take 2 shots, put the gun down, tap it, take 2 shots, put the gun down, tap the table, take 2 shots.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are some of the drills I put them through, you know, and they really find out where they're deficient. You know, and people always, and what I do when I train, I never look at your target. I'm watching you.
Sure.
You know, because I want to see fundamentals, things like that, you know.
Re-gripping between yep. shots and stuff
yep,
like that.
Yeah, re-gripping and things like that. So my whole focus is to watch you, you know, and make sure, you know, you're following the basic safety, you know, you're following the basic safety rules. You know you're not shaking too much. So yeah, just that's just a part of my process.
How did you become so passionate about it? I'm curious. That's a great question.
Was there any
defining moment, or did it just kind of organically develop into that?
Yeah, I would probably say it became more of a passion for me because I know how deadly firearms can be if you're not safe. So I think I had to turn it into, I think if you're going to take this on as a hobby or whatever you want to do, especially with firearms, you have to be 110% well invested into it. Because if you're not, and you can just easily lose sight of what the four basic safety rules are, that's all it takes.
Right.
You know, so for me, that's why I'm so passionate, because I know this could be a tool that can help take a life or save a life.
Yeah, pretty significant.
Right, yeah. So I want to be as competent as I can be, you know, with it. So that's why I have to take that kind of passion about it.
I gotcha. Yeah. Well, now through the country, there's I believe it's 29 states are constitutional carry. Mm-hmm. So there is no, you don't even have to take a class, right? As long as you're allowed to legally own a firearm, you're right. Allowed to carry that firearm. Do you agree with that? Or do you think that there should be some level of training required to carry a firearm?
I'll use an analogy. When you first started to drive in high school, I don't know if they still have it in high school now, you had to take driver's
ed. Oh yeah, it's still there.
You had to have a permit and practice before you were able to. That's my personal opinion.
And now you have to have 40 hours of driving.
Right.
Or 50, 10 at night.
Yeah. You know, so to me, I understand the concept behind it, but this is me personally, there needs to be some type of mandation in place, you know, for people to be required to take some type of competency class or something, you know, to show that they can even, you know, just because you're of age doesn't necessarily mean you should do something.
Yeah. And I'll be honest with you, I struggle with that internally, because there's a part of me that feels you should just be able to.
Of course, I feel that way too. Yeah.
But because of the significance of what a firearm can do, it is like a personal obligation, a personal responsibility to go get that training.
Of course.
But sometimes the training isn't very inexpensive. Sometimes, you know, like you said, people will, I don't have the time. And I don't, I struggle with, I don't know if somebody should not be able to have a firearm because they don't have X amount of hours of training, while also believing 16 hours in Illinois to get your concealed carry license isn't enough. So
yeah.
You know, I literally struggle with both sides of that concept.
Yeah. And
it's a great conversation.
Yeah, and see, I completely get it. You know, I completely get it. Of course, it's your right, it's your privilege to do it. But in my opinion, a responsible gun owner is going to want to train and become better and proficient. That's just me.
Continually.
You're gonna want to continue that training as often and as much as you can. You know, just because you can do it doesn't necessarily mean you should do it.
And it's a diminishing skill. Just because you practice and in, you know, 2023 and you became really good, and then you set it down in 2025, you're not going to be as good.
Yeah, and see, Mantis is a great tool for dry fire.
Yeah.
You know, me, I love Mantis.
We're both big fans.
Yeah. I love Mantis. But for me, my interest in how I train has gone above the Mantis system. Now, you can use that in conjunction, you know, with certain things, you know, but because my level of, and I'm not going to say I'm the greatest shooter, but my level is a little different now, to where I still see the benefit in it, but I get more benefit from some of the other things that I do besides.
Oh, sure. We had on our third or fourth episode of one of the techs from Mantis. It was a great conversation.
Yeah. And which tech was it? Was it Rich?
Was it Jake?
Okay. Yeah.
I believe it was Jake. Last name started with an H, believe. But there's a lot of value.
Of course.
With Mantis, there's a lot of things that are great. There's a couple things that I would like to see improved that I believe they are working on to improve.
Sure.
It just doesn't end there.
Yeah.
That's one of the tools to enhance your training and get you to another level.
Of course.
But it just doesn't end there.
Of course. Yeah. And see, that's part of it. You know, like I said, Mantis is a great tool for beginners and intermediates and experts. But the ones who are a lot more serious about it. They use Mantis in conjunction with another training tool, you know, like a simulation type situation or on their real firearm, the way they can use the live fire, you know, when they're on the range and things like that. You know, yeah, but Mantis is a great tool.
Absolutely. Did you have any other questions on some of the force on force or anything like that, Lee?
I'm just happy we came out, had a chance to meet you and have this conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you what.
Gives me great confidence that there are people out there like you that really take the time to put the time and effort into helping people be their best on whatever their journey happens to be with firearms.
Of course.
Not everybody's going to drink our Kool-Aid.
Of course.
But, man, like doing a great job, I think.
I appreciate it. I do, too.
I mean, I can get better, of course, but, you know.
Yeah, we all can. Yeah.
I'll tell you what I'd like to propose is one of these days I'd like to participate in some of that force on force.
Of course.
And then maybe get together and talk about some of it because haven't done a force on force like you've described.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm sure I would learn something.
Yeah, and I'll give you a little bit of teaser on it. Is that what I do? And I don't tell people this, but I'm vetting you, and you don't know I'm doing it. I'm finding out your triggers, and you don't know I'm doing it. So when you come to that class,
you're pressing people's buttons.
Yep. I had one guy. You know, I popped out from the thing and. You know, and in real life, nobody's going to be nice to you. Nobody's going to be nice to you. You know, so he was a heavier dude, and I came from behind there, and I said, "Give me your fucking money, fat boy." You know, and he,
right?
You know, I do it with women. I did to a woman, and she happened to be a white lady. I came out, I act like I robbed her, and once I robbed her, I said, "You know what? I've never had a white lady before," and I put the gun in her face, and I said, "You're coming with me, dude." She lost it. Because it can actually happen like that. Mm-hmm.
That's how that training becomes effective.
Yeah, and to go in just a little bit more of some of the other stuff I do, I put people in domestic situations. I put people in situations to where, and I'll ask parents, can I use your kids? You know, because, you know, I'll put them in situations to where it's a couple. And say, for instance, I'm walking off with the wife. I got a gun to the husband's head and I'm telling the wife, "You're coming with me." And I grab her and I start walking away with her. She'll know it. She'll know she's playing the game and I'll walk away with her. And then I'll call scene and then I'll go, "Do you think you would have been justified to shoot me in the back?" Because people say, "Well, you can't shoot somebody in the back," depending on the situation.
Right, right.
"Well, I didn't know I could do that." If somebody's walking away with your loved one, remember, you can legally defend and come to the defense of another. "Well, I didn't know I could do that."
But that's why they're there. They're learning that.
Of course.
And anybody else watching,
yes,
is picking up on the scenarios and details of the various scenes that,
right,
that you guys portray.
Yeah, and one thing I'm going to, you know, incorporate into it, and I don't know if you guys, and I'm pretty, well, you were there, Dave McDermott.
Oh, yeah.
You know, now he's actually a part of my gun club, you know, what I'm going to have him do one day, you know, when he has the time, because he's a very busy man, yeah, when he has the time, I'm going to have him sit in on one of our classes so he can tell people, "This would have landed you this would have, you would have been okay with that." Yeah, so I'm going to have him kind of sit in on a class, you know, so he can debrief and go over what the legalities would have been of what they did or didn't do.
You said of a gun club?
Yeah, yeah.
So what is that?
Well, it's a nonprofit gun club that I run. It's a lot of us that get together. You know, we go to the range. We have events like the fashion show. We, you know, we do things like that. You know, we go to different events around the country. You know, and it's mainly me, but it's a bunch of us that get together on a monthly basis that talk gun talk. You know, we talk gun talk, you know, the relevant laws, things like that and everything. Yeah, yeah, so.
That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So you have the Cabo Sports, which is the business part of it, and then you have Cabo Gun Club, which is the nonprofit, you know, where we, you know, just get together and talk on a monthly basis.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and I'm getting ready to actually restructure that because a lot of people who are in the club, they're stagnant. I think when it comes to a club, a lot of people want to be a part of something but not necessarily participate. So I'm going to incorporate forcing people to either train or move on because I don't want this to be a space where people just want to come and talk and say what's going on with sports and things like that.
Yeah, occasionally.
I want you to train. So
kind of sort of what are you bringing to the table?
Right. So Cabo Gun Club is going to be turned into Cabo Sports Training Group.
Gotcha.
So we're going to train together. Yeah.
Great idea. So this firearms and training of firearms is becoming a pretty significant part of your life.
Yeah, it is. Yep, it is. You know, I'm not going to say that it's a great money maker, because it's not. Because if you're in it for the money, then you're in it for the wrong reasons. You know, this is just something that I love to do, and I want to make myself available to people in any time, because everybody's not available on the weekends.
Right.
You know, people, they work, you know, all week, and hell, I mean, I know for me, I don't want to sit in the class 16 hours, a Friday or a Saturday and a Sunday for 8 hours a day, knowing that the Bears may be playing or something.
Yeah.
So somebody may say, well, I'm off on a Tuesday and a Wednesday. Long as I have the time.
That's how him and I met.
I'll just cancel you in.
That's exactly true. How we met. I had to break up my 16-hour class into four-hour.
Yeah.
Well, Sean, I have to tell you, I thoroughly enjoyed this. I did very much.
So
I learned a little bit even tonight, and I know some of the people listening will learn. Hope they reach out for some additional training. I think it's pretty safe to say at some point, Lee and I will probably be back to do some of the training ourselves.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Sean.
Yeah, thank you, Sean. Yeah,
no problem.
Anything you want to say?
Coming out. I just appreciate you guys coming out. You know.
Well, thanks for having us.
Yeah, I'm grateful to be a part of this. You know, and just to express, you know, just keep fighting.
Thanks very much.
I got a little fight left.
Yeah, absolutely.